This episode contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes, which may be disturbing to some listeners.
Today we're bringing you part two of Missing in the Keys, the story of two teenage girls enjoying the last few days of summer before school starts. One moment they're seen hanging out with friends, and the next, they're gone. It's a mystery that's brought more questions than answers.
This is APB Cold Case. Here's your host, former police chief Mark Spahn.
In part one, we met 16-year-old Cindy Gooding and 12-year-old Terry Alfonso, who in 1974 disappeared from Marathon, Florida, a small fishing community where everybody knows everybody. That is, except for the large transient population that seems to flow in and out of the Keys like the tides. If you haven't already, go back and listen to part one where we hear details about one of the last places the girls were thought to have been seen. And be sure to check out our show notes right now to help you follow along. We've got photos, a who's who, a timeline, and maps where we'll call out location numbers if you'd like a visual reference. You can find all this and more on our website at apbcoldcase.com. Now, all persons are presumed innocent. We're not alleging that any of the people we're talking about are official suspects or persons of interest. So let's pick up where we left off. We're talking with Darlene, the older sister of missing 12-year-old Terry Alfonso, and the friend of missing 16-year-old Cindy Gooding. The last time Darlene saw the girls, they were leaving a gathering at a mobile home on 74th Street. They had agreed to meet up later that night, but Darlene never saw them again, and they never came back to her apartment. When Darlene wakes up the next morning, Terry's belongings are still there.
Her purse was left in the Jerry Dale. She didn't take her purse with her, so I knew something was wrong.
Darlene knows her sister, and she knows that Terry wouldn't have left for any length of time without her purse. As the hours tick by with no word from either Cindy or Terry, she starts to get really scared. She knows she has to do something. So at 9:30 p.m. on Tuesday, September 3rd, Darlene and another friend walk into the Monroe County Sheriff's Office to report her little sister, Terry Alfonso, and Cindy Gooding missing.
Me and a friend, Zoanne Winters, went right to the police station and reported it, and then I called my mom. I remember calling my mom from a phone booth and telling her what happened.
The report, taken by Officer Ralph Crago on September 3rd at 9:30 p.m., describes Cindy as 5'8", 87 pounds, with shoulder-length brown hair and green eyes. Last seen wearing blue jeans and a light blue shirt with white and yellow flowers. Terry's described as 5'5", 138 pounds, with dark brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing brown pants and high-heeled shoes. Reports about the color of her shirt vary. One says blue and another says white. Terry's mother tells police that Terry has a small gap between her teeth, pierced ears, and she wears a necklace with a cross and a St. Teresa medallion. In the original report given to police by Darlene, she said that at the time of their disappearance, both Terry and Cindy were staying with her at the Jerry Dale apartment, and it had been 21 hours since she'd been last seen. But filing that report didn't give Darlene the relief she was hoping for. She said that the police didn't do anything right away.
For weeks, they wouldn't do nothing. They kept saying, oh, they're runaways, they're runaways. Yeah, it was like they didn't even want to talk to us. You know, it was really sad back then.
Cindy Gooding's brother remembers getting the news.
I came in from fishing one time, and my little brother told me Cindy had disappeared, and then he went to the sheriff's department looking for her.
We verified that the sheriff's office took the missing person report from Darlene and her friend on September 3, 1974. But we don't know what, if anything, was done in the first days and weeks after the report was made. What we do know is that the girls never came back. So where did Cindy and Terry go after they left the gathering on 74th Street? Darlene told me that Cindy had just broken up with her boyfriend, David, also known as Little Dave. Was she hoping to run into him around town? And did the girls leave the area on foot, or did they get a ride? If they got a ride, was it from someone they knew? Was it the guy with the white van? If you remember, after the girls left the trailer, one of the guys at the gathering asked Darlene if she thought Cindy and Terry needed a ride. She said, Yeah, they could probably use a ride. And the guy left. Darlene said he returned a couple hours later. And she left shortly after that. But she remembers feeling uneasy about that guy and his van.
I remember leaving and just, I got that weird feeling, I don't know why, but of looking in the van, and I didn't because I got scared. I don't know why.
Now, I want you to remember this discussion about a van. It's going to come up several more times. Maybe they got a ride from someone else. Hitchhiking was a popular mode of transportation at the time, especially by teens who didn't have a car. Former Marathon resident Sharon agrees.
Hitchhiking was the way we got around because it would be so incredibly hot down there in the summertime. So when you're walking and you've got 2 miles to walk to get to somewhere, you're going to take the first ride because you want to get out of that heat. You want to get into a car and you want to get to where you're going quickly. And that's why we hitchhiked all the time. Yeah, we weren't the only ones. Back then it was very popular. So yeah, if somebody offered you a ride, you would go. And that probably was just not the best way to do it for young kids that really don't know any better.
When we started researching this case, one of the first things we came across was the girls' NAMIS entries. NAMIS is the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. Terry Alfonso's NAMIS entry lists the circumstances of her disappearance as last seen with a friend at a movie theater in Marathon, Florida. Cindy Gooding is referenced in Terry's entry as the person she went missing with, linking the two cases. But Cindy's NAMIS entry makes no mention of the movie theater. We also notice that many of the write-ups we found on the case include the movie theater as the last place the girls were seen. So we wanted to find out where that information came from and if anyone actually saw them there. We found that Terry's mother, Mercedes, was interviewed by police on at least 2 occasions. In one interview, she said she dropped the girls off at the Marathon movie theater, map location number 3, around 7:30 p.m. And when she returned at 10:30 p.m., the girls weren't there. She told police that after seeing everyone leave the theater, she spoke with the manager who said that the girls had been there. The same report says that Mercedes spoke with a friend of Terry's named Terry Pease in front of the theater who said that she had also seen the girls there and that they were going to meet up with Cindy's boyfriend in the parking lot of the Idle Hour Lounge. When Mercedes went to the Idle Hour, she spoke with several kids who said that they had seen Terry and Cindy earlier. In another interview 12 years after the girls' disappearance, Mercedes' statement changed a little. She told police that she dropped the girls off around 8 to 8:30 p.m., and she said that they were supposed to meet with Darlene after the movie, so there was no mention of her going back to pick them up. And it was in this interview that we see a change in the date. She told police it was in August, not September, when she last saw the girls. It's unclear why Terry's mom would have gone back to the theater to pick up the girls, as she said in her first statement, if the girls had a plan to meet up with Darlene afterward. Maybe there was confusion over the arrangements at the time, or maybe it's a foggy memory. But Terry's sister, Darlene, says she's not sure about her mom's statement.
I don't remember them saying they were going to the movie theater. I don't know. I don't even know if they really went to the movie theater. My mom's the one that said that she had seen them walking and picked them up and dropped them off there. But I don't know, you know, if that's true or not.
So let's delve into that scenario. The distance from the mobile home trailer on 74th Street to the movie theater is just over 0.5 mile, a 13-minute walk. So it's plausible that they headed in that direction after leaving the trailer, and also plausible that Mercedes was driving by when she saw the girls and stopped to give them a ride. Former resident Barb was 14 at the time. She remembers when the girls went missing.
You know, I think Sharon and I were actually at the movie theater that night. And I remember when everyone went back to school, I approached her brother. I said, I'm so sorry. And I don't know exactly what I said. So everyone was kind of thinking, yeah, they just took off. They ran away. I don't remember seeing them at the movie theater that night.
I also spoke with Cherie McMillan, who believes she was working at the theater the night the girls went missing.
That night, I never saw those girls. They could have been dropped off on the side, but if they would have been dropped off on the side, they would have walked in. And they never did. I worked as taking the money in, the tickets and stuff like that. And way it goes is like you got two behind the concession stand and somebody was upstairs running the movie and the manager. And usually right there where I sat, people would pull up, drop their kids off, and I could see who's being pulled up and who's being dropped off. Okay, and there's been a lot of times people would come in and they knew who I was and say, I'm dropping my kids off, tell the kids don't go out this door till I come back to pick you up.
Even though Cherie was older than both Cindy and Terry, she knew who they were.
Marathon was a small place, and if you can imagine, you know, when you went to school, everybody knew everybody. You know, they now to hang out with everybody, but everybody knew who everybody was.
And, of course, since Cherie worked with Darlene at the movie theater, she was familiar with her whole family. She remembers Terry.
Terry was a very beautiful little girl. Now, if you look at her body, you would think Terry was 16. Okay, she had a beautiful body. She looked older than what her age is. Cindy, on the other hand, had a body of a 13-year-old. She just looked 13 and instead of 16, and Terry looked 16 and not 13. And she was just a very beautiful young girl. Her sisters are all beautiful.
I specifically asked if she remembered seeing Terry's mom, Mercedes, coming by the theater that night.
I never did see Miss Mercedes drop them off. I know who she is. I know her well. And I did not see her drop those girls off.
But Cherie said that around closing time, as she was cleaning up after the movie, the phone rang. It was Terry.
And I mean really crying hard. And she wanted to talk to her sister that was working that night. Her sister was Darlene. But Darlene was trying to hurry up and get her job done and so she could leave. I asked her if she was all right, and she told me that her and her mother were fighting.
You'll remember that right from the beginning of our story, I said there's a problem in identifying the exact date the girls were last seen. Darlene did have a job working at the movie theater, but she said she was not working on the night the girls went missing. And you'll remember, when Cindy and Terry left the gathering at the mobile home trailer on 74th Street, Darlene was still there.
She stated that I was working that night, and it couldn't have been the same night because I didn't work that same night. It could be before they went missing that I was working and Terry called in. I don't know.
But we can't dismiss Cherie's entire recollection. It's been 50 years, so some details, like Darlene's working that night, might be a little off. But the time frame of her story is based on a major life event for her, something that gives her account of the date being in September credibility.
How I remember it so well, I was in labor. You know, you remember when you go in labor for the first any time. I had started labor that night, and finally I couldn't take the pain and went to the hospital, and I didn't have my son until Tuesday morning, like 1:05 in the morning.
We don't know exactly how long her labor was, but Cherie gave birth to her son on Tuesday, September 10th. That's exactly 1 week after Darlene and her friend reported the girls missing to police. And while Cherie's recollection and the earlier statement made by Darlene that Terry was just in town visiting for the weekend, both things seem to cement the fact that the girls went missing in September rather than August. I asked Cherie if she knew where Terry was calling from.
Be honest, I don't know where Terry was that night. I still hear her crying. I would say her crying has haunted me for 50 years, knowing I was like probably the last one to hear her voice. Like I said, I didn't hear no partying in the background. It was real quiet and she was really crying hard.
So this information actually raises more questions. Did the call from Terry Alfonso to Cherie at the movie theater actually occur on the night the girls went missing? And if it did, where was she calling from? And if Mercedes dropped the girls off at the theater, Why would Terry be calling to say she was going to hitchhike there? So we're unclear on the exact details of their disappearance. Terry's family begins asking questions around town. And what they discover is there are several alleged sightings of the girls. Darlene and her sister Bonnie were told by a friend, also named Terry, that she had seen the girls on the night they went missing.
Terry Peace, that lived, the dry cleaners that we'd hang out, her and her brother David Peace, she stated to us, this was years later though, that she had seen Cindy and Terry get into a van there on the main highway by her dry cleaners, that they had asked her to go with them and then she didn't, and I guess they hitchhiked. That's how we got around back then, hitchhiking, and they got into a van. She also said that about a van.
Bonnie remembered it too.
And I spoke to Terry Peace personally, and she told me that they had left a party not far from there, the trailer. They came to, it was a laundromat, right, Darlene? The cleaners. My sister Terry and Cindy Gooding wanted Terry Peace to go with them to the party. And they were first going to the Idle Hour.
Now, you just heard Bonnie say that the girls asked Terry Peace to go with them to the party after they stopped by the Idle Hour. So, what party is she talking about? Well, we're going to get into that a little later. So, Terry Peace didn't accept their invitation.
She said no, that she wasn't going to go with them. They walked up a couple blocks where there used to be a place that sold plants on the right-hand side, and a van pulled up. She said there was no windows, and they got in that van. And she says it was a very light-colored van. She couldn't remember if it was like a white or a yellow. She couldn't remember.
I asked Darlene if she thought the sighting was credible, even though it came years later.
I kind of do, because it just weird that them guys had a van and asked me if they needed a ride. And then, you know, but I just, my question is why she didn't say something when we were looking, you know, before, when they first found out. This was years later that she told us this.
We reached out to Terry Peace Cameron herself. She remembers Terry Alfonso and her sister.
Yeah, Terry and I were real good friends. We were closer in age, so. But Darlene was a good friend, too. Their mother didn't like me. I was a wild child.
She shared a memory of a night at the movies, a night when Terry and Cindy were also there. Again, we don't know the date, but she believes it's the same night the girls went missing.
Well, we were all at the movie theater. I probably hitchhiked, got down there, because I think Terry's mom dropped her and Cindy off. I had to rack my brain and go what the movie was, and it was Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And I don't think any of us really, really enjoyed it. I think that was a long movie, like a 3-hour movie or something. So we hitchhiked back to 91st Street. They were going to go to probably the parking lot, Idle Hour parking lot. I was already in trouble and figured, nah, I better not. But I told them I would stay out on the road until they got a ride. And they started to walk. And right past 92nd Street, they got a ride. A van pulled over, a dark van pulled over, and they got in.
I asked her if she saw more than one person in the van.
I think it had to be more than one, because somebody got out of the front and opened the two doors, and then they got in, he closed the door, he got back in the front. So I know there at least had to be two guys. Windows were all blacked out, so I couldn't see inside the van. Plus it was dark out.
She told me the van was heading north, out of the Keys.
I wish I'd have thought to, you know, get a tag number or something. But that was the last I saw of them.
And she still remembers the last words she said to her friends.
Y'all have a good time. Tell me about it tomorrow.
The van sighting by Terry Pease near the corner of US 1 and 92nd Street, which is number 4 on our map, is just under a mile from the van seen at the mobile home trailer on 74th Street. Darlene described the van that she saw at the trailer as white. Bonnie was told that it was beige or possibly gold. And Terry Pease remembers it being dark in color. So are we talking about different vans or different accounts of the same van? So the chronology of the events of that night and the sightings of the girls is unclear. People remember what they remember. And because the investigation and interviews happened sometime after their disappearance, it could just be a simple matter of confusion of dates and not necessarily of the events. But all of these witness accounts are important. They're all pieces of a huge puzzle. The families are worried and frustrated, and they want answers. So they continue to do their own investigation, talking with everyone they know in town. But keep in mind, there are a lot of transient people moving through the Keys. Some potential witnesses and persons of interest could be long gone or not really interested in talking. And according to the family, there seems to have been an initial assumption by police that the girls ran away. Those first hours and days after someone goes missing are crucial. And as I've said before, we don't know the details of what, if anything, was done in those early days. But police reports show there was quite a bit of investigation that occurred throughout the years. As leads came in, police pursued them. We found that there have been many interviews in a number of states with people who may have had knowledge of the girls and their last movements, and some who just needed to be checked out. Detectives also went back and re-interviewed people. When police went back to speak with Terry's mom, Mercedes, 12 years later, they wanted to know if she had any additional information or recollections about the girls' disappearance. She said that the family had heard from a witness that the girls were supposed to meet with Cindy's boyfriend, David, also known as Little Dave, in the parking lot of the Idle Hour Lounge. I asked Terry Alfonso's sister, Darlene, about that.
After my friend and I started looking, when we, you know, the next day we've seen that we couldn't find Terry or Cindy, and we started going around asking, there was people at that time that said they seen Cindy and Terry there that night.
The Idle Hour Bar is number 6 on our map, located on US 1 near 53rd Street, about a mile south of the mobile home trailer on 74th Street. So it's possible that the girls went to the Idle Hour after leaving the trailer. If they went on foot, it would have been about a 25-minute walk. And they would have walked right past the Marathon movie theater. I was curious why teenagers would hang out in the parking lot of a bar. Former resident Sharon remembers going to the Idle Hour with her best friend in the 70s when they were teenagers.
The Idle Hour was, that is where we lived on the weekends. I mean, for young kids, it was a blast. There was plenty of times we hung out in the parking lot. There was always a crowd. Like I said, the big thing to do was get high, and we would do that. But the parking lot was popular because so many people went to the Idle Hour. People that would hang out there knew they would run into somebody that they knew from school. It was a great place. I loved it. That was my favorite place to go.
Darlene remembers hanging out there too.
All the young people that couldn't get in the bars would hang out in the parking lot. So we would all hang out in the front, you know, in the cars and talking and everything.
Along with the Idle Hour, there was another bar mentioned in the original missing person report. The night Terry and Cindy went missing, they were supposedly going to meet someone in front of the Oasis, a hole-in-the-wall fisherman's bar, and number 7 on our map. Sharon and Barb, the former Marathon residents we spoke with earlier, both told me a little bit about the Oasis.
I'm just wondering how come the Oasis came up. Very, very dark, very, very small dive bar. And just a bunch of fishermen sitting in there and drinking. It was not a fun place to be at all.
Barb agreed that it was a rough place. She jokingly called it the Knife and Gun Club.
Because that was where a lot of the shrimpers would come in. So you had a lot of shrimpers that were coming from Bayou LaBetrie, Alabama, Texas, all over, shrimping. And they would either dock there or dock in Key West. And a lot of things went on. I mean, my sister was dating a shrimper who was bringing quaaludes in on his boat. So a lot of stuff going on.
She told us that the Oasis was located in a bad part of town. So did Cindy and Terry go to the Oasis or the Idle Hour to meet up with someone? Was it Cindy's boyfriend, Little Dave? And what was Cindy's state of mind at the time? Her brother told me about the last conversation he had with her shortly before her disappearance.
I came in from fishing one time, and she told me so. She had gotten herself in a little trouble, needed some money. She did not say why she needed money, but, you know, I gave her what I had. That's the last time I ever seen her. So I had to go back out fishing.
I asked Darlene about Cindy's state of mind, specifically on the night the girls disappeared.
I know that she was going through some hard times, and she was that night, she had an argument with her boyfriend, and they were breaking up, so I don't know what happened then. I didn't know him that well, but he was pretty rough guy. I don't know that they were going out for very long. You know, it's so hard to pinpoint time frames right now. But I know they have been dating and she really liked him. So I don't even know what happened that night with them or, you know, before she was with me that night. But I know that she was pretty down and out about it.
Who was breaking up with who? And what do we know about this David?
Oh, David was breaking up with her.
He was blonde hair, brownish blonde hair, kind of curly from what I remember. Good looking boy, very muscular. And I didn't even see him that many times. I remember just seeing him here and there, but that's what I remember of him.
Cherie McMillan shared her memory of David.
He was a handsome guy. Yeah, he was a fun guy to be around. He dated one of my other friends, and she had the biggest crush on him. He was kind of like on the muscular side a little bit. He was well-built, and I want to say from my memory he had blue eyes and blonde hair. Yeah, he was a wild child.
We wondered about his nickname, Little Dave.
He was kind of short with a muscular body, so I call him Little Dave.
Terry Pease Cameron also remembered him.
He was blonde, blue eyes. He was a risk taker. But other than that, really, I didn't know a whole lot about him. I know he stayed a lot down at the Freifogels.
You just heard her mention the Freifogels, a local family who David was friends with. You'll hear that name come up again later. But right now, she's talking about one of the Freifogel boys who David used to hang out with.
And I believe they both worked on fishing boats. You know, they used to do crazy things like jump off Bay Honda Bridge, swim into sharks. But they didn't mind hanging out with all the young girls. You know how guys are.
It wasn't just the girls who remembered Little Dave. Cindy Gooding's brother remembered him too.
Her latest boyfriend was, his name was, they called him Little Dave. I just knew he was about a little bit crazy. And I don't know how many years later it was, but my mom found out that Cindy was living with Dave or staying with Dave, and they had gotten to a big fight. And my mom was curious enough that she hired a private detective to run him down, and he actually found him.
Coming up in part 3 of Missing in the Keys, Cindy and Terry have been spotted at several locations around town. One witness said that Cindy had planned to meet up with her boyfriend, Little Dave. What does he have to say about that? And were the girls seen anywhere else?
But the girl said that they were at that party, that she had seen them at that party. And actually, she had kind of accused her husband.
Did someone take them?
I had absolutely no fear at all, but those two guys always gave me the creeps. They could slip in, slip out, you never see them again.
That's coming up in part 3 of Missing in the Keys. If you or anyone you know has information about the disappearance of 12-year-old Terry Alfonso or 16-year-old Cindy Gooding from Marathon, Florida in 1974, call Crime Stoppers anonymously at 866-471-TIPS or go to crimestoppers305.com or call 1-800-THE-LOST. Be sure to check out our show notes for photos of Cindy and Terry, including age-progressed images, and historical photos of Marathon, a who's who of the people mentioned in this episode, a timeline, maps, and more.
Thanks for listening to APB Cold Case. Tell us about your cold case at apbcoldcase@spawngroup.com. APB Cold Case is an original Spawn Group production.